in the last minute or so. Thomas stared in complete disbelief, not understanding how it could all be possible. It was like somebody had built the maze and then set it afloat in the sky to hover there in the middle of nothing for the rest of eternity.
"I don't get it,"
he whispered, not knowing if Minho could even hear him.
"Careful," the runner replied. "You wouldn't be the first Cenk to fall off the cliff."
He grabbed Thomas's shoulder.
"Did you forget something?"
He nodded back toward the inside of the maze. Thomas remembered hearing the word cliff before, but he couldn't place it at the moment. Seeing the vast open sky in front of and below him had put him into some kind of hypnotized stupor. He shook himself back to reality and turned to face the oncoming Grievers. They were now only dozens of yards away, single file, charging in with a vengeance, moving surprisingly fast. Everything clicked then, even before Minho explained what they were going to do.
"These things may be vicious," Minho said, "but they're dumb as dirt. Stand here, close to me, facing—"
Thomas cut him off.
"I know. I'm ready."
They shuffled their feet until they stood scrunched up together in front of the drop-off at the very middle of the corridor, facing the Grievers. Their heels were only inches from the edge of the cliff behind them, nothing but air waiting after that. The only thing left for them was courage.
"We need to be in sync,"
Minho yelled, almost drowned out by the ear-splitting sounds of the thundering spikes rolling along the stone.
"On my mark!"
Why the Grievers had lined up single file was a mystery. Maybe the maze proved just narrow enough to make it awkward for them to travel side by side. But one after the other, they rolled down the stone hallway, clicking and moaning and ready to kill. Dozens of yards had become dozens of feet, and the monsters were only seconds away from crashing into the waiting boys.
"Ready,"
Minho said steadily.
"Not yet. Not yet."
Thomas hated every millisecond of waiting. He just wanted to close his eyes and never see another Griever again.
"Now!"
screamed Minho. Just as the first Griever's arm extended out to nip at them, Minho and Thomas dove in opposite directions, each toward one of the outer walls of the corridor. The tactic had worked for Thomas earlier, and judging by the horrible screeching sound that escaped the first Griever, it had worked again. The monster flew off the edge of the cliff. Oddly, its battle cry cut off sharply instead of fading as it plummeted to the depths beyond. Thomas landed against the wall and spun just in time to see the second creature tumble over the edge, not able to stop itself. The third one planted a heavily spiked arm into the stone, but its momentum was too much. The nerve-grinding squeal of the spike cutting through the ground sent a shiver up Thomas's spine, though a second later, the Griever tumbled into the abyss. Again, neither of them made a sound as they fell, as if they'd disappeared instead of falling. The fourth and final approaching creature was able to stop in time, teetering on the very edge of the cliff, a spike and a claw holding it in place. Instinctively, Thomas knew what he had to do. Looking to Minho, he nodded, then turned. Both boys ran in at the Griever and jumped feet first at the creature, kicking out at the last second with every waning bit of strength. They both connected, sending the last monster plummeting to its death. Thomas quickly scrambled to the edge of the abyss, poking his head over to see the falling Grievers. But impossibly, they were gone. Not even a sign of them in the emptiness that stretched below. Nothing. His mind couldn't process the thought of where the cliff led or what had happened to the terrible creatures. His last ounce of strength disappeared, and he curled into a ball on the ground. Then, finally, came the tears. Chapter 22. A half hour passed. Neither Thomas nor Minho had moved an inch. Thomas had finally stopped crying. He couldn't help wondering what Minho would think of him, or if he'd tell others, calling him a sissy. But there wasn't a shred of self-control left in him. He couldn't have prevented the tears. He knew that. Despite his lack of memory, he was sure he'd just been through the most traumatic night of his life. And his sore hands and utter exhaustion didn't help. He crawled to the edge of the cliff once more, stuck his head over again to get a better look now that dawn was in full force. The open sky in front of him was a deep purple, slowly fading into the bright blue of day, with tinges of orange from the sun on a distant, flat horizon. He stared straight down, saw that the stone wall of the maze went toward the ground in a sheer cliff until it disappeared into whatever lay far, far below. But even with the ever-increasing light, he still couldn't tell what was down there. It seemed as if the maze was perched on a structure several miles above the ground. But that was impossible, he thought. It can't be. Has to be an illusion. He rolled over onto his back, groaning at the movement. Things seemed to hurt on him and inside him that he'd never known existed before. At least the doors would be opening soon, and they could return to the glade. He looked over at Min-ho, huddled against the hall of the corridor.
I can't believe we're still alive, he said.
Min-ho said nothing, just nodded, his face devoid of expression.
Are there more of them? Did we just kill them all?
Min-ho snorted.
Somehow we made it to sunrise, or we would have had 10 more on our butts before long.
He shifted his body, wincing and groaning.
I can't believe it. Seriously. We made it through the whole night. Never been done before.
Thomas knew he should feel proud, brave, something. But all he felt was tired and relieved.
What did we do differently? I don't know. It's kind of hard to ask a dead guy what he did wrong.
Thomas couldn't stop wondering about how the Grievers' enraged cries had ended as they fell from the cliff, and how he hadn't been able to see them plummeting to their deaths. There was something very strange and unsettling about it.
Seems like they disappeared or something after they went over the edge.
Yeah, that was kind of psycho. Couple of gladers had a theory that other things had disappeared, but we proved them wrong. Look.
Thomas watched as Min-ho tossed a rock over the cliff, then followed its path with his eyes. Down and down it went, not leaving his sight until it grew too small to see. He turned back toward Min-ho.
How does that prove them wrong?
Min-ho shrugged.
Well, the rock didn't disappear, now did it?
Then what do you think happened?
There was something significant here. Thomas could feel it. Min-ho shrugged again.
Maybe they're magic. My head hurts too much to think about it.
With a jolt, all thoughts of the cliff were forgotten. Thomas remembered Albi.
We have to get back.
Straining, he forced himself to get to his feet.
Gotta get Albi off the wall.
Seeing the look of confusion on Min-ho's face, he quickly explained what he'd done with the ropes of ivy.
Min-ho looked down, his eyes dejected. No way he's still alive.
Thomas refused to believe it.
How do you know? Come on!
He started limping back along the corridor.
Because no one's ever made it.
He trailed off, and Thomas knew what he was thinking.
That's because they've always been killed by the Grievers by the time you found them. Albi was only stuck with one of those needles, right?
Min-ho stood up and joined Thomas in his slow walk back toward the glade.
I don't know. I guess this has never happened before. A few guys have been stung by the needles during the day, and those are the ones who got the serum and went through the changing. The poor shanks who got stuck out in the maze all night weren't found until later, days later sometimes, if at all. And all of them were killed in ways you don't want to hear about.
Thomas shuddered at the thought.
After what we just went through, I think I can imagine.
Min-ho looked up, surprise transforming his face.
I think you just figured it out. We've been wrong. Well, hopefully we've been wrong. Because no one who'd been stung and didn't make it back by sunset has ever survived, we just assumed that was the point of no return, when it's too late to get the serum.
He seemed excited by his line of thinking. They turned yet another corner, Min-ho suddenly taking the lead. The boy's pace was picking up, but Thomas stayed on his heels, surprised at how familiar he felt with the directions, usually even leaning into turns before Min-ho showed the way.
Okay, this serum, Thomas said. I've heard that a couple of times now. What is that? And where does it come from?
Just what it sounds like, Shank. It's a serum. The grief serum.
Thomas forced out a pathetic laugh.
Just when I think I've learned everything about this stupid place. Why is it called that? And why are grievers called grievers?
Minho explained as they continued through the endless turns of the maze, neither one of them leading now.
I don't know where we got the names, but the serum comes from the creators. Or that's what we call them, at least. It's with the supplies in the box every week. Always has been. It's a medicine or antidote or something, already inside a medical syringe, ready to use.
He made a show of sticking a needle in his arm.
Stick that sucker in someone who's been stung and it saves them. They go through the changing, which sucks, but after that, they're healed.
A minute or two passed in silence as Thomas processed the information. They made a couple more turns. He wondered about the changing and what it meant, and for some reason, he kept thinking of the girl.
Weird, though, Minho finally continued. We've never talked about this before. If he's still alive, there's really no reason to think Albi can't be saved by the serum. We somehow got it in our clunk heads that once the doors closed, you were done. End of story. I gotta see this hanging on the wall thing myself. I think you're shucking me.
The boys kept walking, Minho almost looking happy, but something was nagging at Thomas. He'd been avoiding it, denying it to himself.
What if another griever got Albi after I diverted the one chasing me?
Minho looked over at him, a blank expression on his face.
Let's just hurry is all I'm saying, Thomas said, hoping all that effort to save Albi hadn't been wasted.
They tried to pick up the pace, but their bodies hurt too much, and they settled back into a slow walk despite the urgency. The next time they rounded a corner, Thomas faltered, his heart skipping a beat when he saw movement up ahead. Relief washed through him an instant later when he realized it was Newt and a group of gladers. The west door to the glade towered over them, and it was open. They'd made it back. At the boy's appearance, Newt limped over to them.
What happened? He asked.
He sounded almost angry.
How in the bloody—
We'll tell you later, Thomas interrupted. We have to save Albi.
Newt's face went white.
What do you mean? He's alive?
Just come here.
Thomas headed to the right, craning his neck to look high up at the wall, searching along the thick vines until he found the spot where Albi hung by his arms and legs far above them. Without saying anything, Thomas pointed up, not daring to be relieved yet. He was still there, and in one piece, but there was no sign of movement. Newt finally saw his friend hanging in the ivy and looked back at Thomas. If he'd seemed shocked before, now he looked completely bewildered.
Is he alive?
Please let him be, Thomas thought.
I don't know. Was when I left him up there.
When you left him?
Newt shook his head.
You and Minho get your butts inside. Get yourselves checked by the medjacks. You look bloody awful. I want the whole story when they're done and you're rested up.
Thomas wanted to wait to see if Albi was okay. He started to speak, but Minho grabbed him by the arm and forced him to walk toward the glade.
We need sleep and bandages. Now.
And Thomas knew he was right. He relented, glancing back up at Albi, then following Minho out and away from the maze. The walk back into the glade and then to the homestead seemed endless. A row of gladers on both sides gawking at them. Their faces showed complete awe, as if they were watching two ghosts strolling through a graveyard. Thomas knew it was because they'd accomplished something never done before, but he was embarrassed by the attention. He almost stopped walking altogether when he spotted Galli up ahead, arms folded and glaring, but he kept moving. It took every ounce of his willpower, but he looked directly into Galli's eyes, never breaking contact. When he got to within 5 feet, the other boy's stare fell to the ground. It almost disturbed Thomas how good that felt. Almost. The next few minutes were a blur. Escorted into the homestead by a couple of medjacks, up the stairs, a glimpse through a barely ajar door of someone feeding the comatose girl in her bed, he felt an incredibly strong urge to go see her, to check on her, into their own rooms, into bed, food, water, bandages. Pain. Finally, he was left alone, his head resting on the softest pillow his limited memory could recall. but as he fell asleep, two things wouldn't leave his mind. First, the word he'd seen scrawled across the torso of both beetle blades, wicked, ran through his thoughts again and again. The second thing was the girl. Hours later, days for all he knew, Chuck was there, shaking him awake. It took several seconds for Thomas to get his bearings and see straight. He focused in on Chuck, groaned, "Let me sleep, you shank."
"I thought you'd want to know."
Thomas rubbed his eyes and yawned.
"Know what?"
He looked at Chuck again, confused by his big smile.
"He's alive," he said. "Albie's okay. The serum worked."
Thomas's grogginess instantly washed away, replaced with relief. It surprised him how much joy the information brought. But then Chuck's next words made him reconsider.
"He just started the changing."
As if brought on by the words, a blood-chilling scream erupted from a room down the hall. Chapter 23 Thomas wondered long and hard about Albie. It seemed such a victory just to save his life, bring him back from a night in the maze. But had it been worth it? Now the boy was in intense pain, going through the same things as Ben. And what if he became as psychotic as Ben? Troubling thoughts all around. Twilight fell upon the glade, and Albie's screams continued to haunt the air. It was impossible to escape the terrible sound, even after Thomas finally talked the medjacks into letting him go, weary, sore, bandaged, but tired of the piercing, agonized wails of their leader. Newt had adamantly refused when Thomas asked to see the person he'd risked his life for. "It'll only make it worse," he'd said, and would not be swayed. Thomas was too tired to put up a fight. He'd had no idea it was possible to feel so exhausted, despite the few hours of sleep he'd gotten. He'd hurt too much to do anything after that, and had spent most of the day on a bench on the outskirts of the Deadheads, wallowing in despair. The elation of his escape had faded rapidly, leaving him with pain and thoughts of his new life in the glade. Every muscle ached. Cuts and bruises covered him from head to toe. But even that wasn't as bad as the heavy emotional weight of what he'd been through the previous night. It seemed as if all the realities of living there had finally settled in his mind, like hearing a final diagnosis of terminal cancer. How could anyone ever be happy in a life like this, he thought. Then, how could anyone be evil enough to do this to us? He understood more than ever the passion the gladers felt for finding their way out of the maze. It wasn't just a matter of escape. For the first time, he felt a hunger to get revenge on the people responsible for sending him there. But those thoughts just led back to the hopelessness that had filled him so many times already. If Newt and the others hadn't been able to solve the maze after 2 years of searching, it seemed impossible there could actually be a solution. The fact that the gladers hadn't given up said more about these people than anything else. And now he was one of them. "This is my life," he thought, "living in a giant maze surrounded by hideous beasts." Sadness filled him like a heavy poison. Albie's screams, now distant but still audible, only made it worse. He had to squeeze his hands to his ears every time he heard them. Eventually, the day dragged to a close, and the setting of the sun brought the now familiar grinding of the four doors closing for the night. Thomas had no memory of his life before the box, but he was positive he'd finished the worst 24 hours of his existence. Just after dark, Chuck brought him some dinner and a big glass of cold water. "Thanks," Thomas said, feeling a burst of warmth for the kid. He scooped the beef and noodles off the plate as fast as his aching arms could move. "I so needed this," he mumbled through a huge bite. He took a big swig of his drink, then went back to attacking the food. He hadn't realized how hungry he was until he'd started eating.
"You're disgusting when you eat," Chuck said, sitting on the bench next to him. "It's like watching a starving pig eat his own clunk."
"That's funny," Thomas said, sarcasm lacing his voice. "You should go entertain the Grievers, see if they laugh."
A quick expression of hurt flashed across Chuck's face, making Thomas feel bad, but vanished almost as fast as it had appeared.
That reminds me, you're the talk of the town.
Thomas sat up straighter, not sure how he felt about the news.
What's that supposed to mean? Oh, gee, let me think. First, you go out in the maze when you're not supposed to, at night. Then, you turn into some kind of freaky jungle dude, climbing vines and tying people up on walls. Next, you become one of the first people ever to survive an entire night outside the glade. And to top it all off, you kill 4 grievers. Can't imagine what those shanks are talking about.
A surge of pride filled Thomas's body, then fizzled. Thomas was sickened by the happiness he'd just felt. Albie was still in bed, screaming his head off in pain, probably wishing he were dead. Tricking them to go over the cliff was Minho's idea, not mine.
Not according to him. He saw you do the wait and dive thingy, then had the idea to do the same thing at the cliff.
The wait and dive thingy? Thomas asked, rolling his eyes.
Any idiot on the planet would have done that. Don't get all humbly-bumbly on us. What you did is freaking unbelievable. You and Minho both.
Thomas tossed the empty plate on the ground, suddenly angry.
Then why do I feel so crappy, Chuck? Want to answer me that?
Thomas searched Chuck's face for an answer, but by the looks of it, he didn't have one. The boy just sat clasping his hands as he leaned forward on his knees, head hanging. Finally, under his breath, he murmured,
"Same reason we all feel crappy."
They sat in silence until a few minutes later, Newt walked up, looking like death on 2 feet. He sat on the ground in front of them, as sad and worried as any person could possibly appear. Still, Thomas was glad to have him around.
"I think the worst part's over," Newt said. "The bugger should be sleeping for a couple of days, then wake up okay. Maybe a little screaming now and then."
Thomas couldn't imagine how bad the whole ordeal must be, but the whole process of the changing was still a mystery to him. He turned to the older boy, trying his best to be casual.
"Newt, what's he going through up there? Seriously, I don't get what this changing thing is."
Newt's response startled Thomas.
"You think we do?"
he spat, throwing his arms up, then slapping them back down on his knees.
"All we bloody know is if the grievers sting you with their nasty needles, you inject the grief serum or you die. If you do get the serum, then your body wigs out and shakes, and your skin bubbles and turns a freaky green color, and you vomit all over yourself. Enough explanation for you there, Tommy?"
Thomas frowned. He didn't want to make Newt any more upset than he already was, but he needed answers.
"Hey, I know it sucks to see your friend go through that, but I just want to know what's really happening up there. Why do you call it the changing?"
Newt relaxed, seemed to shrink even, and sighed.
"It brings back memories. Just little snippets, but definite memories of before we came to this horrible place. Anyone who goes through it acts like a bloody psycho when it's over, although usually not as bad as poor Ben. Anyway, it's like being given your old life back, only to have it snatched away again."
Thomas's mind was churning.
"Are you sure?"
he asked.
Newt looked confused. "What do you mean? Sure about what?"
"Are they changed because they want to go back to their old life? Or is it because they're so depressed at realizing their old life was no better than what we have now?" Newt stared at him for a second, then looked away, seemingly deep in thought.
"Shanks who've been through it'll never really talk about it. They get different. Unlikable. There's a handful around the glade, but I can't stand to be around them."
His voice was distant, his eyes having strayed to a certain blank spot in the woods. Thomas knew he was thinking about how Albie might never be the same again.
"Tell me about it," Chuck chimed in. "Callie's the worst of them all."
"Anything new on the girl?" Thomas asked, changing the subject. He was in no mood to talk about Gally. Plus, his thoughts kept going back to her.
"I saw the medjacks feeding her upstairs."
"No," Newt answered. "Still in the buggin' coma, or whatever it is. Every once in a while she'll mumble something, nonsense, like she's dreaming. She takes the food, seems to be doing all right.
It's kind of weird. A long pause followed, as if the three of them were trying to come up with an explanation for the girl. Thomas wondered again about his inexplicable feeling of connection with her, though it had faded a little. But that could have been because of everything else occupying his thoughts. Newt finally broke the silence.
Anyway, next up, figure out what we do with Tommy here.
Thomas perked up at that, confused by the statement. Do with me? What are you talking about? Newt stood, stretched his arms.
Turn this whole place upside down, you bloody shank. Half the gladers think you're God. The other half want to throw your butt down the box hole. Lot of stuff to talk about.
Like what? Thomas didn't know which was more unsettling, that people thought he was some kind of hero, or that some wished he didn't exist.
Patience, Newt said. You'll find out after the wake-up.
Tomorrow? Why? Thomas didn't like the sound of this.
I've called a gathering, and you'll be there. You're the only buggin' thing on the agenda.
And with that, he turned and walked away, leaving Thomas to wonder why in the world a gathering was needed just to talk about him. Chapter 24 The next morning, Thomas found himself sitting in a chair, worried and anxious, sweating, facing 11 other boys. They were seated in chairs arranged in a semicircle around him. Once settled, he realized they were the keepers, and to his chagrin that meant Galley was among them. One chair directly in front of Thomas stood empty. He didn't need to be told that it was Albie's. They sat in a large room of the homestead that Thomas hadn't been in before. Besides the chairs, there was no other furniture except for a small table in the corner. The walls were made of wood, as was the floor, and it didn't look like anyone had ever attempted to make the place look inviting. There were no windows. The room smelled of mildew and old books. Thomas wasn't cold, but shivered all the same. He was at least relieved that Newt was there. He sat in the chair to the right of Albie's empty seat.
In place of our leader sick in bed, I declare this gathering begun, he said, with a subtle roll of his eyes, as if he hated anything approaching formality. As you all know, the last few days have been bloody crazy, and quite a bit seems centered around our green bean, Tommy, seated before us.
Tommy's face flushed with embarrassment.
He's not the greenie anymore, Galley said, his scratchy voice so low and cruel it was almost comical. He's just a rule-breaker now.
This started off a rumbling of murmurs and whispers, but Newt shushed them. Thomas suddenly wanted to be as far from that room as possible.
Galley, Newt said, try to keep some bug in order here. If you're gonna blabber your shuck mouth every time I say something, you can go ahead and bloody leave, because I'm not in a very cheerful mood.
Thomas wished he could cheer at that. Galley folded his arms and leaned back in his chair, the scowl on his face so forced that Thomas almost laughed out loud. He was having a harder and harder time believing he'd been terrified of this guy just a day earlier. He seemed silly, even pathetic now. Newt gave Galley a hard stare, then continued.
Glad we got that out of the way.
Another roll of the eyes.
Reason we're here is because almost every loving kid in the Glade has come up to me in the last day or two, either boo-hooing about Thomas or begging to take his bloody hand in marriage. We need to decide what we're going to do with him.
Galley leaned forward, but Newt cut him off before he could say anything.
You'll have your chance, Galley. One at a time. And Tommy, you're not allowed to say a buggin' thing until we ask you to. Good that?
He waited for a nod of consent from Thomas, who gave it reluctantly, then pointed to the kid in the chair on the far right.
Zart the fart, you start.
There were a few snickers as Zart, the quiet big guy who watched over the gardens, shifted in his seat. He looked to Thomas more out of place than a carrot on a tomato plant.
Well,
Zart began, his eyes darting around almost like he was waiting for someone else to tell him what to say.
I don't know. He broke one of our most important rules. We can't just let people think that's okay.
He paused and looked down at his hands, rubbing them together.
But then again, he's changed things. Now we know we can survive out there, and that we can beat the Grievers.
Relief flooded Thomas. He had someone else on his side. He made a promise to himself to be extra nice to Zart.
Oh, give me a break, Gally spurted. I bet Minho's the one who actually got rid of the stupid things.
Gally, shut your hole, Newt yelled, standing for effect this time. Once again, Thomas felt like cheering.
I'm the bloody chair right now, and if I hear one more buggin' word out of turn from you, I'll be arranging another banishing for your sorry butt.
Please, Gally whispered sarcastically, the ridiculous scowl returning as he slouched back into his chair again. Newt sat down and motioned to Zart.
Is that it? Any official recommendations?
Zart shook his head.
Okay. You're next, Frypan.
The cook smiled through his beard and sat up straighter.
Shank's got more guts than I've fried up from every pig and cow in the last year.
He paused as if expecting a laugh, but none came.
How stupid is this? He saves Albie's life, kills a couple of grievers, and we're sitting here yapping about what to do with him. As Chuck would say, this is a pile of clunk.
Thomas wanted to walk over and shake Frypan's hand. He'd just said exactly what Thomas himself had been thinking about all of this.
So what are you recommending? Newt asked.
Frypan folded his arms.
Put him on the freaking council and have him train us on everything he did out there.
Voices erupted from every direction, and it took Newt half a minute to calm everyone down. Thomas winced. Frypan had gone too far with that recommendation, almost invalidating his well-stated opinion of the whole mess.
All right, writing her down,
Newt said as he did just that, scribbling on a notepad.
Now everyone keep their bloody mouths shut. I mean it. You know the rules. No ideas unacceptable, and you'll all have your say when we vote on it.
He finished writing and pointed to the third member of the council, a kid Thomas hadn't met yet, with black hair and a freckly face.
I don't really have an opinion, he said.
What?
Newt asked angrily.
Lot of good it did to choose you for the council, then.
Sorry, I honestly don't, he shrugged. If anything, I agree with Frypan, I guess. Why punish a guy for saving someone's life?
So you do have an opinion, is that it?
Newt insisted, pencil in hand. The kid nodded, and Newt scribbled a note. Thomas was feeling more and more relieved. It seemed like most of the keepers were for him, not against him. Still, he was having a hard time just sitting there. He desperately wanted to speak on his own behalf, but he forced himself to follow Newt's orders and keep quiet. Next was acne-covered Winston, keeper of the Bloodhouse.
I think he should be punished. No offense, Greeny, but Newt, you're the one always harping about order. If we don't punish him, we'll set a bad example. He broke our number one rule.
Okay, Newt said, writing on his pad. So you're recommending punishment?
What kind?
I think he should be put in the slammer for a week with only bread and water, and we need to make sure everyone knows about it so they don't get any ideas.
Gally clapped, earning a scowl from Newt. Thomas's heart fell just a bit. Two more keepers spoke, one for Frypan's idea, one for Winston's. Then it was Newt's turn.
I agree with the lot of you. He should be punished, but then we need to figure out a way to use him. I'm reserving my recommendation until I hear everyone out.
Next. Thomas hated all this talk about punishment, even more than he hated having to keep his mouth shut. But deep inside, he couldn't bring himself to disagree. As odd as it seemed after what he'd accomplished, he had broken a major rule. Down the line they went. Some thought he should be praised, some thought he should be punished, or both. Thomas could barely listen anymore, anticipating the comments from the last two keepers, Gally and Minho. The latter hadn't said a word since Thomas had entered the room. He just sat there, drooped in his chair, looking like he hadn't slept in a week. Gally went first.
I think I've made my opinions pretty clear already.
Great, Thomas thought, and just keep your mouth shut.
Good that, Newt said with yet another roll of the eyes. Go on then, Minho.
No!
Gally yelled, making a couple of keepers jump in their seats.
I still want to say something.
Then bloody say it, Newt replied.
It made Thomas feel a little better that the temporary council chair despised Gally almost as much as he did. Though Thomas wasn't that afraid of him anymore, he still hated the guy's guts.
Just think about it, Gally began. This slinthead comes up in the box, acting all confused and scared. A few days later, he's running around the maze with grievers, acting like he owns the place.
Thomas shrank into his chair, hoping that others hadn't been thinking anything like that. Galley continued his rant.
I think it was all an act. How could he have done what he did out there after just a few days? I ain't buying it.
What are you trying to say, Galley? Newt asked. How about having a bloody point?
I think he's a spy from the people who put us here.
Another uproar exploded in the room. Thomas could do nothing but shake his head. He just didn't get how Galley could come up with all these ideas. Newt finally calmed everyone down again, but Galley wasn't finished.
We can't trust this, Shank, he continued. Day after he shows up, a psycho girl comes spouting off that things are gonna change, clutching that freaky note. We find a dead griever. Thomas conveniently finds himself in the maze for the night, then tries to convince everyone he's a hero. Well, neither Minho nor anyone else actually saw him do anything in the vines. How do we know it was the greenie who tied Albie up there?
Galley paused. No one said a word for several seconds, and panic rose inside Thomas's chest. Could they actually believe what Galley was saying? He was anxious to defend himself and almost broke his silence for the first time, but before he could get a word in, Galley was talking again.
There's too many weird things going on, and it all started when this shuck-faced greenie showed up. And he just happens to be the first person to survive a night out in the maze. Something ain't right, and until we figure it out, I officially recommend that we lock his butt in the slammer for a month, and then have another review.
More rumblings broke out, and Newt wrote something on his pad, shaking his head the whole time, which gave Thomas a tinge of hope.
Finished, Captain Galley? Newt asked.
Quit being such a smart aleck, Newt, he spat, his face flushing red. I'm dead serious. How can we trust this, Shank, after less than a week? Quit voting me down before you even think about what I'm saying.
For the first time, Thomas felt a little empathy for Galley. He did have a point about how Newt was treating him. Galley was a keeper, after all. But I still hate him, Thomas thought.
Fine, Galley, Newt said. I'm sorry.
We heard you.
And we'll all consider your bloody recommendation. Are you done?
Yes, I'm done. And I'm right.
With no more words for Galley, Newt pointed at Minho.
Go ahead, last but not least.
Thomas was elated that it was finally Minho's turn. Surely he'd defend him to the end. Minho stood quickly, taking everyone off guard.
I was out there. I saw what this guy did. He stayed strong while I turned into a panty-wearing chicken. No blabbing on and on like Galley. I want to say my recommendation and be done with it.
Thomas held his breath, wondering what he'd say.
Good that, Newt said. Tell us then.
Minho looked at Thomas.
I nominate this Shank to replace me as Keeper of the Runners.
Chapter 25. Complete silence filled the room, as if the world had been frozen and every member of the council stared at Minho. Thomas sat stunned, waiting for the runner to say he'd been kidding. Galley finally broke the spell, standing up.
That's ridiculous!
He faced Newt and pointed back at Minho, who had taken his seat again.
He should be kicked off the council for saying something so stupid!
Any pity Thomas had felt for Galley, however remote, completely vanished at that statement. Some keepers seemed to actually agree with Minho's recommendation, like Frypan, who clapped to drown out Galley, clamoring to take a vote. Others didn't. Winston shook his head adamantly, saying something that Thomas couldn't quite make out. When everyone started talking at once, Thomas put his head in his hands to wait it out, terrified and awed at the same time. Why had Minho said that? Has to be a joke, he thought. Newt said it takes forever just to become a runner, much less the keeper. He looked back up, wishing he were 1,000 miles away. Finally, Newt put his notepad down and stepped out from the semicircle, screaming at people to shut up. Thomas watched on, as at first no one seemed to hear or notice Newt at all. Gradually, though, order was restored, and everyone sat down.
"Shuck it," Newt said. "I've never seen so many Shanks acting like teat-sucking babies. We may not look it, but around these parts we're adults. Act like it, or we'll disband this bloody council and start from scratch."
He walked from end to end of the curved row of sitting keepers, looking each of them in the eye as he spoke.
Are we clear?
Quiet had swept across the group. Thomas expected more outbursts, but was surprised when everyone nodded their consent, even Galley.
Good, that.
Newt walked back to his chair and sat down, putting the pad in his lap. He scratched out a few lines on the paper, then looked up at Min-ho.
That's some pretty serious clunk, brother.
Sorry, but you need to talk it up to move it forward. Thomas couldn't help feeling eager to hear the response. Min-ho looked exhausted, but he started defending his proposal.
It's sure easy for you, Shanks, to sit here and talk about something you're stupid on. I'm the only runner in this group, and the only other one here who's even been out in the maze is Newt.
Galley interjected.
Not if you count the time I don't,
Min-ho shouted.
And believe me, you or nobody else has the slightest clue what it's like to be out there. The only reason you were stung is because you broke the same rule you're blaming Thomas for. That's called hypocrisy, you shuck-faced piece of...
Enough, Newt said.
Defend your proposal and be done with it.
The tension was palpable. Thomas felt like the air in the room had become glass that could shatter at any second. Both Galley and Min-ho looked as if the taut, red skin of their faces was about to burst, but they finally broke their stare.
Anyway, listen to me, Min-ho continued as he took his seat. I've never seen anything like it. He didn't panic. He didn't whine and cry. Never seemed scared. Dude, he'd been here for just a few days. Think about what we were all like in the beginning. Huddling in corners, disoriented, crying every hour, not trusting anybody, refusing to do anything. We were all like that for weeks or months, till we had no choice but to shuck it and live.
Min-ho stood back, pointed at Thomas.
Just a few days after this guy shows up, he steps out in the maze to save two Shanks he hardly knows. All this clunk about him breaking a rule is just beyond stupid. He didn't get the rules yet. But plenty of people had told him what it's like in the maze, especially at night. And he still stepped out there, just as the door was closing, only caring that two people needed help.
He took a deep breath, seeming to gain strength the more he spoke.
But that was just the beginning. After that, he saw me give up on Albie, leave him for dead. And I was the veteran, the one with all the experience and knowledge. So when Thomas saw me give up, he shouldn't have questioned it. But he did. Think about the willpower and strength it took him to push Albie up that wall, inch by inch. It's psycho. It's freaking crazy. But that wasn't it. Then came the Grievers. I told Thomas we had to split up, and I started the practiced evasive maneuvers, running in the patterns. Thomas, when he should have been wetting his pants, took control, defied all laws of physics and gravity to get Albie up onto that wall, diverted the Grievers away from him, beat one off, found...
We get the point, Galley snapped. Tommy here is a lucky Shank,
Min-ho rounded on him. No, you worthless shuck! You don't get it! I've been here 2 years, and I've never seen anything like it. For you to say anything...
Min-ho paused, rubbing his eyes, groaning in frustration. Thomas realized his own mouth had dropped wide open. His emotions were scattered. Appreciation for Min-ho standing up to everybody on his behalf, disbelief at Galley's continuous belligerence, fear of what the final decision would be.
Galley, Min-ho said in a calmer voice, you're nothing but a sissy who has never, not once, asked to be a runner or tried out for it. You don't have the right to talk about things you don't understand, so shut your mouth.
Galley stood up, fuming.
Say one more thing like that, and I'll break your neck, right here, in front of everybody.
Spit flew from his mouth as he spoke. Min-ho laughed, then raised the palm of his hand and shoved Galley in the face. Thomas half stood as he watched the glider crash down into his chair, tipping it over backward, cracking it in two pieces. Galley sprawled across the floor, then scrambled to stand up, struggling to get his hands and feet under him. Min-ho stepped closer and stomped the bottom of his foot down on Galley's back, driving his body flat to the ground. Thomas plopped back into his seat, stunned.
I swear, Galley, Min-ho said with a sneer, don't ever threaten me again. Don't ever speak to me again. Ever. If you do, I'll break your shuck neck,
right after I'm done with your arms and legs."
Newt and Winston were on their feet and grabbing Min-ho before Thomas even knew what was going on. They pulled him away from Gally, who jumped up, his face a ruddied mask of rage. But he made no move toward Min-ho. He just stood there with his chest out, heaving ragged breaths. Finally, Gally backed away, half stumbling toward the exit behind him. His eyes darted around the room, lit with a burning hatred. Thomas had the sickening thought that Gally looked like someone about to commit murder. He backed toward the door, reached behind him to grab the handle.
"Things are different now," he said, spitting on the floor. "You shouldn't have done that, Min-ho. You should not have done that."
His maniacal gaze shifted to Newt.
"I know you hate me, that you've always hated me. You should be banished for your embarrassing inability to lead this group. You're shameful. And any one of you who stays here is no better. Things are going to change. This, I promise."
Thomas's heart sank, as if things hadn't been awkward enough already. Gally yanked the door open and stepped out into the hall, but before anyone could react, he popped his head back in the room.
"And you," he said, glaring at Thomas, "the green bean who thinks he's friggin' God. Don't forget, I've seen you before. I've been through the changing. What these guys decide doesn't mean jack."
He paused, looking at each person in the room. When his malicious stare fell back on Thomas, he had one last thing to say.
"Whatever you came here for, I swear on my life, I'm going to stop it. Kill you if I have to."
Then he turned and left the room, slamming the door behind him. Chapter 26. Thomas sat frozen in his chair, a sickness growing in his stomach like an infestation. He'd been through the whole gamut of emotions in the short time since he'd arrived at the Glade. Fear, loneliness, desperation, sadness, even the slightest hint of joy. But this was something new. To hear a person say they hate you enough that they want to kill you. "Gally's crazy," he told himself. "He's completely insane." But the thought only increased his worries. Insane people could really be capable of anything. The council members stood or sat in silence, seemingly as shocked as Thomas at what they'd just seen. Newt and Winston finally let go of Min-ho. All three of them sullenly walked to their chairs and sat down.
"He's finally whacked for good," Min-ho said, almost in a whisper.
Thomas couldn't tell if he'd meant for the others to hear him.
"Well, you're not the bloody saint in the room," Newt said.
"What were you thinking? That was a little overboard, don't you think?"
Min-ho squinched up his eyes and pulled his head back, as if he were baffled by Newt's question.
"Don't give me that garbage. Every one of you loved seeing that slinthead get his dues, and you know it. It's about time someone stood up to his clunk."
"He's on the council for a reason," Newt said.
"Dude, he threatened to break my neck and kill Thomas. The guy is mentally whacked, and you better send someone right now and throw him in the slammer. He's dangerous."
Thomas couldn't have agreed more, and once again almost broke his order to stay quiet, but stopped himself. He didn't want to get in any more trouble than he was already in, but he didn't know how much longer he could last.
"Maybe he had a good point," Winston said, almost too quietly.
"What?"
Min-ho asked, mirroring Thomas's thoughts exactly. Winston looked surprised at the acknowledgement that he'd said anything. His eyes darted around the room before he explained.
"Well, he has been through the changing. Griever stung him in the middle of the day just outside the west door. That means he has memories. And he said the greenie looks familiar. Why would he make that up?"
Thomas thought about the changing and the fact that it brought back memories. The idea hadn't occurred to him before, but would it be worth it to get stung by the Grievers, go through that horrible process, just to remember something? He pictured Ben writhing in bed and remembered Albie's screams. No way, he thought.
"Winston, did you see what just happened?"
Frypan asked, looking incredulous.
"Gally's psycho. You can't put too much stock in his rambling nonsense. What, you think Thomas here is a griever in disguise?"
Council rules or no council rules, Thomas had finally had enough. He couldn't stay silent another second.
"Can I say something now?"
he asked, frustration raising the volume of his voice.
"I'm sick of you guys talking about me like I'm not here."
Newt glanced up at him and nodded.
"Go ahead. This bloody meeting can't be much more screwed up."
Thomas quickly gathered his thoughts, grasping for the right words inside the swirling cloud of frustration, confusion, and anger in his mind.
"I don't know why Gally hates me. I don't care. He seems psychotic to me. As for who I really am, you all know just as much as I do. But if I remember correctly, we're here because of what I did out in the maze, not because some idiot thinks I'm evil."
Someone snickered, and Thomas quit talking, hoping he'd gotten his point across. Newt nodded, looking satisfied.
"Good, that. Let's get this meeting over with and worry about Gally later." "We can't vote without all the members here," Winston insisted. "Unless they're really sick, like Albie."
"For the love, Winston," Newt replied.
"I'd say Gally's a wee bit ill today, too, so we continue without him. Thomas, defend yourself, and then we'll take the vote on what we should do with you."
Thomas realized his hands were squeezed up into fists on his lap. He relaxed them and wiped his sweaty palms on his pants. Then he began, not sure of what he'd say before the words came out.
"I didn't do anything wrong. All I know is I saw two people struggling to get inside these walls and they couldn't make it. To ignore that because of some stupid rule seemed selfish, cowardly, and, well, stupid. If you want to throw me in jail for trying to save someone's life, then go ahead. Next time, I promise, I'll point at them and laugh, then go eat some of Frypan's dinner."
Thomas wasn't trying to be funny. He was just dumbfounded that the whole thing could even be an issue.
"Here's my recommendation," Newt said. "You broke our bloody number one rule, so you get one day in the slammer. That's your punishment. I also recommend we elect you as a runner, effective the second this meeting's over. You've proven more in one night than most trainees do in weeks. As for you being the buggin' keeper, forget it." He looked over at Minho. "Gally was right on that account. Stupid idea."
The comment hurt Thomas's feelings, even though he couldn't disagree. He looked to Minho for his reaction. The keeper didn't seem surprised, but argued all the same.
"Why? He's the best we have, I swear it. The best should be the keeper."
"Fine," Newt responded. "If that's true, we'll make the change later. Give it a month and see if he proves himself." Minho shrugged.
"Good, that."
Thomas quietly sighed in relief. He still wanted to be a runner, which surprised him, considering what he'd just gone through out in the maze, but becoming the keeper right away sounded ridiculous. Newt glanced around the room.
"Okay, we had several recommendations, so let's give it a go-round."
"Oh, come on," Frypan said. "Just vote. I vote for yours."
"Me too,"
Minho said. Everyone else chimed in their approval, filling Thomas with relief and a sense of pride. Winston was the only one to say no. Newt looked at him.
"We don't need your vote, but tell us what's been bonking around your brain."
Winston gazed at Thomas carefully, then back to Newt.
"It's fine with me, but we shouldn't totally ignore what Gally said. Something about it. I don't think he just made it up. And it's true that ever since Thomas got here, everything's been shucked and screwy."
"Fair enough," Newt said. "Everyone put some thought into it. Maybe then we can get right nice and bored and we can have another gathering to talk about it. Good, that?"
Winston nodded. Thomas groaned at how invisible he'd become.
"I love how you guys are just talking about me like I'm not here."
"Look, Tommy," Newt said. "We just elected you as a buggin' runner. Quit your crying and get out of here. Minho has a lot of training to give you."
It hadn't really hit Thomas until then. He was going to be a runner, explore the maze. Despite everything, he felt a shiver of excitement. He was sure they could avoid getting trapped out there at night again. Maybe he'd had his one and only turn of bad luck.
"What about my punishment?"
"Tomorrow," Newt answered. "The wake up till sunset."
One day, Thomas thought. That won't be so bad. The meeting was dismissed and everyone except Newt and Minho left the room in a hurry. Newt hadn't moved from his chair where he sat jotting notes.
Well, that was good times, he murmured. Minho walked over and playfully punched Thomas in the arm.
It's all this Shank's fault.
Thomas punched him back.
Keeper? You want me to be keeper?
You're nuttier than Galley by a long shot. Minho faked an evil grin.
Worked, didn't it? Aim high, hit low. Thank me later.
Thomas couldn't help smiling at the keeper's clever ways. A knock on the opened door grabbed his attention. He turned to see who it was. Chuck stood there, looking like he'd just been chased by a griever. Thomas felt the grin fade from his face.
What's wrong?
Newt asked, standing up. The tone of his voice only heightened Thomas's concern. Chuck was wringing his hands.
Medjack sent me.
Why?
I guess Albie's thrashing around and acting all crazy, telling them he needs to talk to somebody.
Newt made for the door, but Chuck held up his hand.
He doesn't want you.
What do you mean?
Chuck pointed at Thomas.
He keeps asking for him.
Chapter 27 For the second time that day, Thomas was shocked into silence.
Well, come on, Newt said to Thomas as he grabbed his arm. No way, I'm not going with you.
Thomas followed him, with Chuck right behind, as they left the council room and went down the hall toward a narrow, spiraling staircase that he hadn't noticed before. Newt took the first step, then gave Chuck a cold glare.
You, stay.
For once, Chuck simply nodded and said nothing. Thomas figured that something about Albie's behavior had the kid's nerves on edge.
Lighten up, Thomas said to Chuck as Newt headed up the staircase. They just elected me a runner, so you're buddies with a stud now.
He was trying to make a joke, trying to deny that he was terrified to see Albie. What if he made accusations like Ben had? Or worse?
Yeah, right,
Chuck whispered, staring at the wooden steps in a daze. With a shrug, Thomas began climbing the stairs. Sweat slicked his palms, and he felt a drop trickle down his temple. He did not want to go up there. Newt, all grim and solemn, was waiting for Thomas at the top of the stairwell. They stood at the opposite end of the long, dark hallway from the usual staircase, the one Thomas had climbed on his very first day to see Ben. The memory made him queasy. He hoped Albie was completely healed from the ordeal, so he didn't have to witness something like that again. The sickly skin, the veins, the thrashing. But he expected the worst, and braced himself. He followed Newt to the second door on the right, and watched as the older boy knocked lightly. A moan sounded in reply. Newt pushed open the door, the slight creak once again reminding Thomas of some vague childhood memory of haunted house movies. There it was again, the smallest glimpse at his past. He could remember movies, but not the actors' faces, or with whom he'd watched them. He could remember theaters, but not what any specific one looked like. It was impossible to explain how that felt, even to himself. Newt had stepped into the room and was motioning for Thomas to follow. As he entered, he prepared himself for the horror that might await. But when his eyes lifted, all he saw was a very weak-looking teenage boy lying in his bed, eyes closed.
"Is he asleep?"
Thomas whispered, trying to avoid the real question that had popped in his mind.
"He's not dead, is he?"
"I don't know," Newt said quietly. He walked over and sat in a wooden chair next to the bed. Thomas took a seat on the other side.
"Albie," Newt whispered.
Then more loudly.
"Albie."
"Chuck said you wanted to talk to Tommy."
Albie's eyes fluttered open, bloodshot orbs that glistened in the light. He looked at Newt, then across at Thomas. With a groan, he shifted in the bed and sat up, his back against the headboard.
"Yeah,"
he muttered, a scratchy croak.
"Chuck said you were thrashing around, acting like a loony." Newt leaned forward. "What's wrong? You still sick?"
Albie's next words came out in a wheeze, as if every one of them would take a week off his life.
"Everything's gonna change. The girl. Thomas.
I saw them.
His eyelids flickered closed, then open again. He sank back to a flat position on the bed, stared at the ceiling.